Welcome to the Agency in Focus, Department of Veterans Affairs, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
The biggest civilian federal agency has undergone 2 years of continuous debate and reform. Veterans Affairs is trying to modernize its support systems, rationalize its real estate, improve its workforce, and give its constituents more choice of where they can get medical care. Much of this work has involved the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Chairman Phil Rowe of Tennessee joins me now with his take on the VA. Congressman, good to have you on.
Great to be on. Thanks very much for having me.
We are talking at a time when the whole federal budget situation is a little bit up in the air. But let's talk about the choice program, assuming there is some sort of budget continuity. What are you hoping for with respect to veterans' choice, both budgetarily and programmatically?
Well, that's a great question. Let's back up about 3.5 years. It's hard to believe it's been that long. But 3.5 years ago, we found out about the weight scandals in Phoenix. And it turned out that that was much more systemic than we thought. Was going on a lot of other places, and veterans were not getting in, and these wait lists were occurring, and they just weren't able to access the VA care that they had earned. And so we started a choice program, which really was almost doomed initially to fail, because what we asked the VA to do in 90 days was to put together a network of physicians around the country to provide care outside the VA. So there were two organizations that were used to do that, and it is much better than it used to be. It's working better now. And the VA, when you looked at how they provided non-VA care, and Tom, 30% of the care, the medical care that the VA provides is outside the VA. And there were six different ways, plus choice, about how veterans accessed care outside the VA. What we're doing with, matter of fact, we just voted on the legislation yesterday, and it was members of the committee had co-sponsored this legislation. It's a piece of legislation I'd worked on for a year about how veterans access their care outside the VA. And very simply, I'll just go very quickly through it. In my own private health insurance plan, I have a primary care doctor who oversees my care. We'll do the same thing at the VA. It'll be called a PAC team or a primary care team at the VA. If you cannot get into that primary care team, you can be issued. You can use your choice program to go outside the VA. Once you're in that primary care team, if there's a specialist within your VA medical center, and I have one in my hometown, Mountain Home VA, that can see you and take care. Let's say it's a cardiologist, and you get a timely appointment, you can go do that. If you cannot, your doctor and you will let you go outside. The initial choice program said you had to be 40 miles and had to have more than a month's wait for your appointment.
Right.
The
they reason, even had
the
trouble
reason
measuring
we
what's
that
40
is
miles.
Because in this new one, we basically just let you go where you want to. You and your doctor decide that.
I guess there was even some questions over what is 40 miles, making it
That's
really
correct.
Confusing.
Well, where I live, for instance, in the mountains of East Tennessee, it could be 38 miles, but it may take you an hour and a half because you got to go over a mountain range to get there. So, and I've been all over the country. I've been to the Phoenix VA. I was out in Oregon not too long ago, and one of the congressmen there, Greg Walton, I went to visit his district. His congressional district has more square miles than the state of Tennessee does. So his needs are very different in rural Oregon than there are in say, urban Memphis or Nashville.
And so this plan that you have got the full committee behind, I presume that means both Republicans and Democrats,
yes.
Is the VA happy with it? Is Dr. Shulkin, is that something he supports? And it sounds like it bodes well for becoming law at some
point.
Well,
I sat down when I started this. I said, this has to be a bipartisan agreement. So I sat down with all the members, either one-on-one or in small groups on both sides of the aisle. Also got together with the veteran service organizations, also got together with the VA staff and said, look, we need a plan that we can all agree on that will work. So the Senate has passed a bill that has a lot of the same provisions, and we will work out the differences between those two bills and hopefully get that done. Now, Dr. Shulkin, the secretary, needs this done sooner rather than later because this has to go into effect 1 October of 2019.
So this bill, is it tied to the continuing resolution or any of the budgetary bills, or is it something standalone?
It is. This will be a standalone bill. It is peripherally tied to all this that's going on in D.C. right now. One is the funding. We need $2.1 billion to fund choice to get us to October 1, where the new plan, when we consolidate all of this money, the six different ways that you get non-VA care plus choice, and that'll be about $12.5 billion the first year. It's a large number. But veterans seem to like it. The ones where it's working, ones where it didn't work, and obviously don't like it, but where it is actually working well, veterans are pleased with it.
We're speaking with Congressman Phil Rowe, chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And what's your long-term view of where VA needs to go once these things are all kind of in hand?
Tom, that's a great question. The VA needs a transformation. I'll give you an example. I'll use the VA campus I've been on literally hundreds of times at home. It's a mile and a half from where I live. My VA Medical Center in Johnson City, Tennessee, was built, opened in 1903 for Civil War veterans. Well, that's not how we provide care any longer. And a modern VA healthcare system needs to take the care to the veteran. And that's why we've encouraged, and the Secretary has done this, to improve the outpatient clinics that the veterans can go to in their community. So take the care to the veterans. Do as much of it outside the hospital as you can do, and only use the hospital for the more severely ill or complicated cases that we need to do. And for our listeners out there, I'm a physician, and I'm also a veteran, and served as a battalion surgeon in the 2nd Infantry Division in 1973 and 74 in Korea. So I'm familiar with the VA. I did some of my training there, my medical training. Plus, I've served as a medical physician, so I'm pretty well aware to know how the system ought to work. And I know that the things we're able to do as an outpatient now, we used to have to do as an inpatient. And I'll use myself as an example. Again, I'd never had an operation in my life, and I had two in the last year. One was a back surgery, and the other was a radical prostatectomy. I had prostate cancer. And I was in the hospital less than 48 hours for both of those procedures. So we've changed dramatically about how care is given, and we want to right-size the VA. The other part of that I was at Fairchild Air Force Base out in Spokane, Washington, about a month ago. There, the DOD is implementing the new Cerner electronic health record system.
Sure, yep.
The VA is going to transition to that. That's very much a part of how we modernize the VA.
And that gets into the bigger question of VA's information technology, which is somehow tied up to the scheduling scandal, and now that this switchover from the VISTA system to the MGH and the Cerner. I told Secretary Shulkin that it's going to take 20 years to do that, just following the history of federal IT projects. Will the committee be riding herd on that whole process of conversion?
Well, I've had, and I say this jokingly, but the misfortune of putting an electronic health record in my practice. We implemented one about 10 years ago, and it is not easy to do. It's painful for the providers to change how they're doing it. And remember that VA had a cutting-edge technology system to begin with. That system was far ahead. Unfortunately, and I won't go into it because it is complicated, but it actually was isolated to each VA medical center. It wasn't as interoperative. Their need wasn't there then. The need is there now, because if we're providing a third of the care outside the VA, there has to be a cloud-based system where doctors like me who weren't part of the VA can access that VA medical record and then send a record back. That information's got to flow out of the VA and back into the VA, if that makes sense. And you are correct. I don't know how long it's going to take, but it is going to be after going to Fairchild that I'd spent some time out there, and I intend to go back to Washington State, because that region is one place DOD has implemented the electronic health system, the Cerner system. So I need a deeper dive, and I've certainly encouraged the Secretary to send his folks out there, because it's going to be a humongous undertaking to convert this system.
Congressman Phil Rowe is chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. I'm Tom Temin.
Leidos is proud to support the VA and its mission to care for Americans' veterans. Leidos is committed to advancing the next generation of healthcare at the VA through outcome-based solutions and scalable IT. We strive for better access to care and improved health outcomes for our men and women who served. Leidos was recently named Washington Technology's number one government contractor in IT, systems integration, professional services, and telecommunications. For nearly 50 years, we have developed practical answers for a complicated world. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
We're speaking with Congressman Phil Rowe, chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And to get back to the topic of VA providing more care in community situations and low-key or nearby types of offices, how does that fit in with the care under choice, which is providers outside of the VA system itself altogether and just paid for by VA?
It actually makes it we realize that you need to have case management. In other words, if you have complicated, we've learned this in the private sector through the the Medicare modernization, that you need a case manager. So in my bill, whether you get your care outside the VA, that care has to be coordinated, or it'll be fractionated, and it won't be the quality of care that you need. So we provide a case manager for someone. Let's say they're a diabetic and have hypertension and have some issues from their military service. They're service connected. You need that case manager to be sure that that veteran is getting the quality of care they need, and we provide that in this bill.
Because they would also need, the providers, that is, would need availability of the healthcare record that's being developed. That would need to be seen by people outside of VA. If there's a case manager structure to all of this, they'd all have to have the same record.
Absolutely. And I'll give you an example of a problem with that. I went into a dialysis center in Kingsport, Tennessee. They dialyze veterans there. And if they have a veteran that has some issue, they have no way to look back at the record. So let's say the medicines was changed, and many of these folks on dialysis are seriously ill people. And so they have to have access to the record, and right now they don't have timely access to it. There's a legacy viewer, it's called, where you can look back into the old VA system, but that's not quick enough in today's technology, and we're going to have to fix it. When I saw patients outside the VA, they would send me a record, or sometimes I didn't get anything. And I would just say, have to go start from zero. Why are you here? What problem are you having? And then I would communicate that back to the VA. That can all be done electronically now. It has to be done electronically to make this work.
And somehow this all ties into VA's real estate. There's a couple of hundred major medical centers. Each one is a congressman's gem in his or her district. Do you see long-term under the community care, under the choice care, under these different programs, maybe the VA doesn't need so many giant hospitals that are expensive to maintain?
I think it's 1,100 buildings that are either underutilized or not occupied at all. And I've been to Northport and on Long Island and visited the VA Medical Center there, and there are buildings there that are just falling down. And VA is going to have to deal with those, and the secretary is ready to do it. And again, health care is not provided. Think about how it was when I started practice in 1977, we have 500-bed hospitals. Well, we had probably a 100-bed hospital today can carry out what a 500-bed hospital did 40 years ago because of just the speed, the technology that we've created to improve patient care. So, yes, the VA needs to do that, and we're going to do that. We're going to take a look at that and try to help the secretary. He is very well positioned to be able to right-size the VA to make sure that patients get the quality care that they deserve.
Sometimes the veterans advocate groups bristle at the idea, but it's also been floated that let's just make VA the provider of combat-related post-traumatic stress syndrome, traumatic brain injury, that kind of thing, that are definitely related to combat or service duty, and every other type of care just go outside of VA as a long-term trend. Do you see that ever happening?
I don't think that will happen. I truly don't. I think that the VA, and by the way, for our listeners out there, no other country in the world, and we'll never get the VA absolutely right so that every veteran gets exactly what they should get. It's a huge organization. We're treating millions of people. But we sure as heck ought to try. And we're the only country in the world that I know of that has a separate system. I've had the Canadians and the British come here and look at our system because they just use with the single-payer system. They have government-run system. A veteran just gets a card like anybody else is on the public system. That's not how we treat our veterans here because of the uniqueness of some of their injuries. So I don't think you'll see that happening at all. I think we're going to continue this system, and we want to make this system better.
And also a couple of years, Congress did some reforms to personnel for VA, and some of those reforms actually got translated over to the entire federal workforce with respect to the probation times and treatment of senior executive service members. But VA does have a slightly different system now. Do you see further personnel reforms coming, such as moving more people under Title 53, for example, that was floated a couple of years ago?
Perhaps. I think we just passed a bill last March, April, called the Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act. And what it allowed for the first time was the secretary to terminate. Most employees, as you know, do a great job at the VA. They're dedicated people, and they work hard. I know many of them in my hometown. I go to church with them. They're friends of mine. I know them. I've known many of them for decades. But there are people who do not perform well. And before, the secretary really was limited about who he could fire. Now we've given him that authority, and he's used it. I've forgotten, I think, about 1,500 times. So it's been used many, many times. And we may have to change it a little bit. I don't know. But I think we need to let that work its way out before we do anything else.
And while we have you, what's your expectation for the next couple of days with respect to getting something passed to keep the government open after Friday night?
Well, in about an hour, I'm going to go over and vote on the redo on the tax bill. And then we're correct. We're working. I'm on the whip team here, so we were counting noses last night about the votes we had on the continuing resolution, which will contain that $2.1 billion for choice. So people are going to be motivated to put that vote in for that. We'll see what my personal opinion is. The government's not going to shut down. We're going to keep the government functioning open as we should, and we'll get to it. I think we'll have a short-term CR. We'll fund the military long-term for a year, which is what they've been asking for now for 7 years, and upfund them about $70 billion, which they need in today's dangerous world. So I think that's what's going to happen. I think we're going to get it done.
Congressman Phil Rowe is chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One. I'm Tom Temin.
Leidos is proud to support the VA and its mission to care for Americans' veterans. Leidos is committed to advancing the next generation of healthcare at the VA through outcome-based solutions and scalable IT. We strive for better access to care and improved health outcomes for our men and women who served. Leidos was recently named Washington Technology's number one government contractor in IT, systems integration, professional services, and telecommunications. For nearly 50 years, we have developed practical answers for a complicated world. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
Members of both the House and Senate have been debating the Veterans Choice Program for the past year. There's a lot they agree on, but also things they don't. And those disagreements have been holding up Congress as it attempts to find a new path forward for VA choice. Republicans and Democrats on the House Veterans Affairs Committee have been debating their latest bill, the VA Care in the Community Act. Here are Committee Chairman Phil Rowe and Ranking Member Tim Walz.
I'm proud to sponsor this bill and have every single one of you joining me as original co-sponsors. Achieving a unanimous bipartisan show of support on legislation of this complexity, importance, and cost is a testament to the spirit of this committee and to the hard work we've accomplished together over the past year. I'm grateful to each of you, and in particular Ranking Member Walz, as well as our partners in the Veteran Service Organization community and the administration for helping to get us here today. Before we begin our work this morning, I'll yield to Ranking Member Walz for any opening remarks that he may have.
Well, thank you, Chairman, and thank you all for being here. And again, I think all of us have earned each other's respect. We've earned the reputation of working together. And while it's true we all moved the ball forward on this piece of legislation, that was prior to what happened last month with the CBO. That was also prior to talk of authorizing caps that we're going to talk about today. We all understand that care in the community has been around forever. Streamlining those processes to make sure when VA is unable to deliver that care that we are able to, or if it's geographic limitations. There's general agreement amongst all of us on eligibility criteria, which will define VA's role in determining where veterans receive their care, and on provider agreement language, which will ease the burden on small providers. Those were some of the hurdles that we worked on together to support this comprehensive bill. We almost got there last month, then the CBO score came in. So we're back again today. And I'm disappointed, instead of addressing that issue head on, we are going to contort ourselves around to try and make some artificial caps that aren't going to ever get us closer to understanding the true cost of care in the community. I don't question anybody's commitment to getting this done right, but I think we all need to be very clear. It is a stark, stark contrast that on this day, and probably in the middle of this markup, we're going to talk about putting caps on here and limiting care and not having the honest discussion as CBO got us, as we walk to the floor and people cast a vote to reduce taxes on the wealthiest, add $1.5 trillion to the deficit.
That's House Veterans Affairs Committee Chairman Phil Rowe explaining his new bill, the VA Care in the Community Act, and Ranking Member Tim Walz. Roe has been negotiating with his colleagues on the committee for months, but Democrats and Republicans can't agree on how to pay for the program. Ranking Member Walz again.
I understand your ideological belief in this. I only wish there were a way that you could find the original Adam Smith and have him on this committee so that his invisible hand could move those tax cuts dollars to the choice in the VA program to ensure that we are able to get the funding that is necessary. Because when we come back again next year and the deficits are there and the money is not there to pay, you're going to sit in these very chairs and ask yourself, are you going to cut that care? Are you going to move it from VA? Are you going to ask the taxpayers to pay more? How are we going to get there? So the caps that have a 3% growth rate each year hamstrings Congress and the VA if the need is higher. The need will be higher. I say that without any sense of wisdom or anything. I say it with the sense of history that we'll be at. It'll be closer to 6%. There's no reason to believe care in the community won't grow even faster. We honestly don't know what our baseline in spending will need to be under this legislation because the authorizations for community care will grow. The tax bill under consideration will remove the ACA mandate, and without those funds, an estimated 5 million people will lose coverage to the individual market, another 5 million through Medicaid. If these provisions pass, veterans who can no longer use the ACA, and there are millions of them, will have no other option if they can't go to Medicaid to go to the VA for care. If that's true, this committee introduced a bill with every committee member as a co-sponsor, but before any of those things were in play. The Senate Veterans Affairs Committee passed its version 14-1. On policy, we are all in line with each other, but when it comes to funding, this is where we're at the crossroads.
The House VA committee is typically harmonious, but members got more heated as they argued over adding spending caps to the Veterans Choice Program. Democrats said minutes before the House planned to vote on the new tax bill that they were outraged the bill would set specific spending limits on the Veterans Community Care Program. Chairman Roe has a different argument.
I remember the argument I had when I got this pen, which was the first year I showed up here, which is 2009. We were in a recession, and so we needed to spend $800+ billion of government money deciding how it was spent to stimulate the economy. But when we cut taxes for people and allow them to keep their own money and spend it, somehow that doesn't stimulate the economy. I don't understand quite the logic, because I heard that logic 8 years ago, 9 years ago. And if you leave people their money and you look at the 1986 Reagan tax cuts, you look at the capital gains tax cuts that occurred and also during the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, revenue went up. And that's the whole point, is to get the tax rate as low as you can get it and get revenues to government to go up. I think that's what our idea is. Other people believe, and I'll just tell you on the caps and things we're talking about. I didn't look at the CBO score because I can barely follow how they think. But I do know this. I know we spent $9 billion last year on the six programs, non-choice programs for care, clinical care in the community. We spent about $3.5 billion on choice. I realize I went to school for 23 years, never did attend a private university. This is all public. I got to add nine and three and a half, and I got $12.5 billion. And I know next year we're going to go up some probably because there will be some more care. And by the way, anybody who is seeing the VA now has what the ACA defined as adequate coverage. So if they're in VA care, they're eligible, they're there now. You're not going to see an influx of people.
Committee Chairman Phil Roe. Roe ultimately agreed to get rid of spending limits in the VA Care in the Community Act. The committee eventually passed the bill. But again, members are still looking for a consensus on just how they'll pay for more veterans to access care outside of the VA's own system. Meantime, the Senate committee has its own bill, the Caring for Our Veterans Act. That legislation is significantly more expensive because it would expand caregiver benefits to veterans of all eras. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Agency in Focus. Tune in next week when I speak to the Veterans Affairs Inspector General, Michael Missel. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, Department of Veterans Affairs, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com.